So, Peter, that's episode three of our Debt Tech podcast recordings. And I thought Steve Cotward came across brilliant, as we expected him to, and gave us and our listeners a bit of an insight, maybe it's what they've not had before, from a government debt collection perspective, and his sort of view now working on the other side of the fence, as you put it in the podcast. But great conversation again.
Yeah, Steve's a fantastic guest. Can't believe we're number three already. Yeah, we sort of cantered around quite a few of the subjects, dropped into the thorny old subject of SDRP as well, and even sort of, you know, what other things we could do to try and remedy some of the things that SDRP is trying to correct. But yeah, a good conversation.
It's I mean, it's quite obvious from the people I speak to in the sector we operate in, different sectors as part of different discussion forums. Shout out to Malg there, by the way, which we were both just announced as ambassadors for last week, which is a great, again, great vehicle for bringing people together and debating these types of issues. Yeah. But the vast majority of people want to achieve the same thing, which is the best outcome for the customer and the best outcome for the creditors that are owed debts. And it's only by discussing different views and debating different views, I think we'll get to that end point.
I think you're right. I mean, I saw a big shift over the 10 years or so that I was running the CSA. And I think, you know, we do still have some, or, you know, groups of organizations that still collect slightly differently. But I think there are drivers there that are forcing them down those routes. I think just, you know, no disrespect to anybody who's campaigning in public affairs, but I think sometimes if you just push back all the time on a key thing without having an alternative solution that someone could pick up and grapple with, it just forces people down different routes, often routes that you didn't intend in the first place. But I think, yeah, I think the majority of organizations trying to collect money from people out there are wanting the same thing. And interestingly, about SDRP, I hear a lot of similarity from people sort of in their views on that. Let's hope the government listens.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm really pleased with that episode now, and we'll be announcing our next guest for episode four shortly. But I've, again, really enjoyed that discussion and looking forward to the next one.
Well, should we crack on and roll titles?
Let's roll titles, yes.
Okay, here we go.
The Debt Tech Podcast with Peters and Lee.
No, it's not Peters and Lee, it's Peter and Lee.
Should I just go, yeah?
Yes.
I was going to ask you, I'd like to ask you something that's not in the script.
Ooh, that's a good question.
You haven't got an auto remover, have you?
No.
Yeah, that was very diplomatic, but the short answer is Nottingham Forest.
The only difference I know between Crystal Palace and Cappuccino is Cappuccino stays in the cup for longer.
He has many fantastic credits, not quite as many as Oscar Wilde.
That'll come back to bite at some point. Not literally.
I was told the other day I've got a very good face for podcasts. I thought, all right, thanks for that.
The Debt Tech Podcast with Peter and Lee.
So today we're delighted to have with us Steve Cotward, formerly Deputy Director of the Government Debt Management Function at the Cabinet Office, now, of course, Group Director of Debt Policy and Strategy at ARAM. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Peter. Good to be with you today.
Great you could join us. Is this a classic case of gamekeeper turned poacher, or more a continuation of your pursuit for a fairer way to collect debt? And as you've coined the phrase, getting people out of debt rather than debt out of people.
I think it's probably the latter, Peter. I mean, you could describe it as the former. It depends where your mindset's at. Look, so for me, I've been 21 years in government. And I've been moving towards that post for a long time. You know, the getting people out of debt came from my HMRC days. It wasn't something that I did as thought leadership in the Cabinet Office. And, you know, things in government take an awful long time to mature. We get to play with the biggest toys, but they take a very, very long time to come to fruition. And so I was looking at, well, sort of what we'd achieved over the last few years. And, you know, I'm known for going on about customer vulnerability. But the reason I spoke about that rather than the broader picture was because we weren't having that conversation in government. When I started, at least, and we've now weaved that into the very fabric of government debt. we peppered the whole landscape with it. We've got so much stuff in the public domain that you now cannot unpick that. So now it's really for somebody else to pick up that mantle and go forward and actually do something with it. And I think for me, now I want to get my hands dirty again. Yeah. I want to be back in, you know, leading on debt issues, not just for Aaron, but for Just as well. You know, to be able to work with an enforcement market integrator and a professional services company, with let's face it, the lineup of both of those companies is pretty strong. You know, the recruitment that's been done, and it's for me, it's fantastic to be able to stand or sit at the same table now as the same people I've sat across the table from for many years, and really be able to feel like I'm doing something again, rather than waiting for the right conditions to come along where we can affect the change.
Well, sounds good. Well, when Lee's done the intro to these podcasts or the two we've done before, he sort of usually started off with a slightly sort of lighter introduction. I think that was a really good introduction, actually. That set us up well for this podcast. But this is where I start to struggle, because I know nothing about football, but I know you're a Crystal Palace fan. So does that mean you know nothing about football as well?
You just stole that line off me, Peter. That's absolutely terrible. I'm really happy for you to, you know, to try and get a little bit of the limelight. But yes, Peter, I know nothing about football either.
and you know, that's the limit of my interrogation skills on this subject. But yes, well, God loves a try. I think pinching your line was probably the best thing I could do there. Well, okay, cracking on. I mean, you said sort of about sitting opposite the table. I think we've always been, particularly you and I, have been in raging agreement as how debt collection should work in government and local authorities. You know, they're very different from the commercial creditors, both in terms of the way they're funded and, of course, the type of debt they're collecting. But as you and I have said in speeches many more times than we probably care to admit, we're all collecting from the same human beings, people just like you and me. And the approach should be the same, irrespective of anything else. So a couple of questions to get us started, I suppose, in one. And that is, how do you think local authorities and central government are doing on that journey? And as we're focusing on how digital solutions could help, do you think they're making the best use of the tech?
So I guess there's a few things to touch on there. So yes, there's a need for transformation across government. We see very different solutions in the private sector than we see in the public sector, and I understand the rationale for that. If the private sector doesn't innovate and change quickly, then those companies will fail. There's an absolute need to do that. And government, I guess, has the luxury of sitting back a little bit and watching those developments and then engaging with the best in market. I do think there may have been a tendency over the years for government organisations, public bodies, to try and transform their debt management as part of broader organisational transformation programmes, which often span many years. And what we're seeing in the private sector at the moment is you don't need to do that. There are loads of great standalone digital tools that don't require you to have that huge investment to be able to make use of. And actually, if you can free up agent time by using those tools, then you can really start to reap the benefits and spend more time where you need to. So look, a few examples on that. Self-serve is an obvious one. You can build your business rules in and allow it to take an opti-channel approach based on next best action. You know, you can call on your internal payment history data to do that. So you can say, well, look, this customer is always 5 days late. So they'll probably be 5 days late this time. Let's not take any action until day six. Mm-hmm. Or this customer's never been in debt before. We should give them a call and just see how they're doing, find out what's going on. I think one thing I know HMRC made use of, and I think it's absolutely critical, is flexible direct debits. So we still have a lot of people on gig economy, on 0 hours contracts, or indeed people who are self-employed, micro businesses and sole traders who would you know really benefit from that. There's stuff like QR codes, you know, that's virtually free. You can embed that. And as soon as somebody's got their mobile phone in their hand and scanned the QR code, they're halfway there. We've spoken about open banking on many occasions. You know, yeah. I've seen better and better services. I did hear near the beginning of open banking, one very large organisation in the private sector say, no, open banking isn't that great. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, well, open banking's an ingredient. It's what you cook with it that really makes the difference.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you need the good products to come out of that. But if you can pre-populate income and expenditure forms, and I appreciate it, Lee, you'll probably only get an 80-20 out of it, but it still reduces agent time.
Yes.
But that really opens up the door to things like standard financial statement, which, let's be honest, it's a long document to go through. But if you can pre-populate 80% of the standard financial statement, then you're getting the best-in-class INE form out there that really takes into account everything that's going on in the customer's life. We're seeing today income maximization built into websites. So you've got benefits calculators, you've got social tariff, like water social tariff calculators out there. If you could put discretionary housing payments into local authority websites and see if people are eligible for those. You're seeing all the local grants like for white goods and things like that are available. You know, I've always been really attracted to the fact we know that there's 16 billion in benefits that isn't being collected each year, isn't being claimed. And I heard Art Mitchell's Unwin from the Cabinet Office talking at LACEF conference last year, and he was talking about the Digital Economy Act pilot on council tax.
Yeah.
And Pete, you and I, we were both involved in that at one stage.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I can talk about this because it is in the public domain, but Art was saying, you know, not only because they used direct earnings attachments rather than enforcement on that particular one. These were cases that enforcement had failed on. This was the stuff that was sitting there waiting to be written off for local authorities, but because they used that data sharing and actually got the employer data from HMRC. They were finding at one end of the spectrum, people on you know, significant incomes who all of a sudden thought their employer was going to find out the fact they weren't paying their council tax and stumped up, you know, over £10,000 in one payment.
Mm.
But at the other end of the spectrum, there was a high number of families who actually were entitled to other benefits and discretionary housing payments, and they were actually able to get people out of debt by giving them the income that they were entitled to. Now that, yeah, I think is really poetic.
Yes.
The fact that we can give people help that gets them out of debt, keeps them out of debt, and actually it hasn't really cost them a penny out of their existing pocket.
Sure, sure. No, I think you make some good points there. I mean, it's interesting you're talking about sort of protecting customers. I know a matter that's sort of quite close to your heart at the moment. I know you guys at Arum are going to do a response to the most recent consultation on SDRP. I just wanted to touch on that, if I could, just a moment, because one of the reasons SDRP, I think, was proposed when I cast my mind back to the early days with HMRT was to give some customers in debt protection from creditors, you know, debt collection and so on. And I was always sort of struggling a little bit as the guy running the CSA to understand who were protecting the customers from, because all our members were quite good at giving breathing space and their approach to customers in debt. And I sort of cast my mind back, I suppose, a little bit also to some work you and I were doing with the Centre for Social Justice a little while ago, when we're talking about, you know, people in debt and, you know, taking a slightly different attitude to the way in which local government, central government maybe are forced sometimes to collect. And SDRP sort of, you know, when I talk to people, it sounds like that, you know, we're trying to protect people from, you know, some of the commercial organisations like utility companies, maybe some telcos, but local authorities and some central government. And you sort of think, well, why are we taking the SDRP approach to that, when perhaps we're just dealing with a symptom and not a cause? I mean, I see an awful lot of stick for local authorities, but sometimes are they forced a little bit to sort of collect in the way they are doing?
Yeah, I think they are, Peter. You know, if you look, I mean, what have local authorities had to go on? So they've had the same operational process laid into legislation since 1992. I'm saying it slowly because I'm recalling the date as I'm doing so. I'm getting a bit old these days.
It's a while ago.
So we've seen this. It was. It's a well. It's 30 years now. Yeah. It is, yeah. You know, and we know that the Council Tax Administration Enforcement Regulations were a shoo-in of the old community charge, more commonly known as poll tax. Regulations. Now think back 30 years to what was going on. I can just about remember. I'm sure you can remember very well, Peter, the poll tax riots. It was, the regs were designed for a different time and a different class of indebted person. And fast forward 30 years, what we know about the psychology of debt these days, you know, you've only got to look at what the government's been doing off the back of the Money and Mental Health Policy Institute campaign, on the big red text and shouty writing in letters. It doesn't work for people. No. You know, I've always said debt isn't about numbers. Debt is about people and behaviours and psychology, and engagement is king. So the regulations are there for local authorities. And look, let's be honest, they are permissive rather than mandated. But we've seen various sets of best practice over the years issued by the Ministry for Housing, Communities and Local Government, as it was. And that's what we're calling it today, the Department for Levelling Up Communities and Housing, I think. Yeah. But of course, it takes investment to deviate from the standard process. And with local authorities reliant on council tax for so much of their income these days, it could create this vicious circle where the only way to invest is to collect more council tax. You know, it was only 2 or 3 years ago, I think, that the NAO Financial Sustainability of Local Government report noted that in the preceding 7 years, local authorities have seen a 49% real terms decrease in funding from central government. And then you've had the decline of the high street in favour of online. You know, that must lead to lower levels of business rates. And we've got all these things that we take for granted, I guess, in a way, as a society. Adult social care, rubbish collections, libraries. You know, these services don't pay for themselves. And it becomes even harder when local authorities then, and the communities they serve, are buffeted by the current economic headwinds. So I've a great deal of sympathy with what local government is going through in terms of trying to do the right thing in a lot of cases. Yeah. You know, we've got some brilliant examples of best practice out there. Barking and Dagenham, you know, the work that Mark Fowler did over there, I think was absolutely fantastic. And Charlotte Acre over at Southwark as well. And there are loads more. So I'm not going to get into a listing game because otherwise I'll be told
you'll miss somebody out.
For forgetting somebody. But, you know, these are real challenges. We've got at the moment the Community and Local Government Inquiry into Council Tax Collection. And it's the first time that I've ever seen the government ask the question, do the regulations need to change? Mm-hmm. And I watched the inquiry, the live witnesses giving evidence on that. You know, you had Russell Hamblin Boone there from Civia. You had Paul White from White & Co, of now Civia president.
Yeah.
There was Kevin Stewart from Mid Sussex, Catherine Brown from the newly formed Enforcement Conduct Board. There's Citizens Advice were represented as well, a few others. There's a broad consensus that the regs probably are a bit out of date now and do need updating.
Yeah.
What that actually looks like, it remains to be seen. Whether it actually goes ahead remains to be seen. But there's a broad consensus that they do need updating now, and I'd be very much in favour of that.
I've come from a background predominantly financial services, 20 odd years working in financial services, various different ports. And when I moved out of that sector into I would imagine government type body, Money and Pension Service, and working with local authorities, it was pretty obvious to me that there was a big gap in how things were done from financial services to local authorities. And one of the things that I think I picked up on was the lack of engagement from a local authority perspective with people like Money Advice Liaison Group, the different trade associations, where you get people from different areas discussing the big challenges. That seems to have changed now, though. And you've mentioned a couple of names from local authorities there. Thomas Clark's another one from Birmingham. They seem to be much more willing now to get involved in the conversation and be part of the solution, I suppose, of a better way forward. So for me, that's going to be to the greater good from a local authority perspective.
I think you're absolutely right, Lee. And this for me is the challenge of thought leadership. Let's not single out local authorities. I'll go broader, but just on local authorities, you've got over 330 autonomous billing authorities, each one elected locally through local democracy, and they act in the interest of their residents. And then broader than that, you've got, you know, the rest of the sort of 20 odd central government departments. You kind of get to thinking, you know, if all of those tried to get into MALG, you'd almost need like MALG 2. and so I think what we end up with is representative groups. And what I see from my side is different organizations, it's like the Kubler-Ross grief curve or transition curve, depending on how you've seen it. You know, some organizations will be in that denial phase, and it'll be, no, we've done it this way for years, we're still going to keep doing it that way, no we're not going to change. And then you've got some organizations that are starting to experiment, and they are going out, as you say, Lee, and talking to others around them, trying to find out best practice, see where some low-hanging fruit is, some quick wins. And then you've got those who are way ahead of the curve and absolutely storming ahead on this stuff. And they provide the best case studies that we can bring back. And for me, all of that creates brilliant content for thought leadership, but it's all aimed at trying to level the operational playing field. Customers don't care who they're in debt to. They owe money, and it's the owing of the money, it's the debt itself that is a worry to individual people.
Yeah,
where it has to go to is less of a concern.
Yeah,
and with an uneven operational playing field, what you end up with, if you're a really forward thinking financial services institution that's doing a lot to help that customer out, and then actually another organisation comes in and says, we're going to pass you over to enforcement within 10 days. The unevenness of that journey is likely to drive the customer to bury their head in the sand for everybody. And it's not a great customer experience. And that's why I've always tried to bring the entire industry together, all sectors of the industry, because we do. The principles of debt management, of debt resolution, should be the same regardless of whether it's public or private.
100%, yeah, really. I mean, that's fundamental, isn't it? You see, is it the average customer in debt, that owe debts to 7 or 8 different creditors? If you've got those 7 or 8 different creditor organisations doing things the right way, that must be so much better from a customer perspective, their journey. But it just takes one or two, like you say, who aren't doing it the right way. And it just can totally derail that customer in terms of their chances of getting out of debt and back on the firm financial footing that they want to be, no doubt.
Yeah, could completely agree. And that's, I mean, Peter, you mentioned the SDRP. That's one of the concerns I've got around that at the moment. Where Aram is putting a response into the Treasury consultation, which closes on the 5th of August. So we're getting close. There's this period between a period between the notice of intention and then 21 days or so later when the actual the provisional plan is issued, whereby the Treasury has said that it expects creditors to stop adding charges and cease enforcement litigation action, but it's not legislating for it.
Yeah.
And because you don't have to go into a breathing space first, you won't necessarily have the breathing space protections. Now, we all know that there are a few rogue actors in the industry. If you've got one of those on your creditor list, would you not think that they would see that 21 days as a target within which to get paid rather than go on a plan which industry, our market insight suggests average plan lengths are going to be 10 years?
Yeah.
Where we, yeah. There are things we still need to discuss in SDRP, but it comes back to that point. if we don't level the operational playing field, we will never achieve a great customer experience. And I firmly believe that there is no reason why a debt resolution call cannot be a brilliant customer experience.
No, yeah. I totally agree. I think, I mean, we're coming up to sort of end of the time, and I think, you know, I'm sort of going to stray a little bit potentially for another podcast, you know, on our thoughts perhaps on, you know, a universal regulation for debt collection, which I know you and I have talked about a bit over the years, Steve, and sadly, I don't think there's a desire for it, but it'd be great in lots of respects because it would deal with the cause, not the symptom. And I think we're trying to tackle the symptom with SDRP, you know, and you know, I think there's going to be plenty written about SDRP over the next week or so as that consultation closes and as we try to get across the message to the government that, you know, perhaps this isn't the best way. There's a lot of hard work gone into this, but I think they've overcooked it, I think, in a lot of respects. But, you know, I sort of come back to that, I think a lunch we had one time, Steve, when you and I talked about, wouldn't it be great if we had a regulation for debt collection per se, and we could capture all these issues, you know, and achieve a lot of the things that we've been trying to do. And you guys were doing very, very well at the fairness group at the Cabinet Office. But no, maybe that's a conversation for another day. But now I think it's been really interesting to hear your thoughts, actually, Steve. And unless you've got anything else you'd like to ask Lee.
No, it's good to hear people like Steve speak, who are going to have a huge influence on how debt collection evolves over the coming months and years. So again, thanks for your time, Steve. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks very much, Steve.
Thank you very much. Really good speak to both of you.
Well, if you're still listening to us, that means you've managed to get to the end of the third Debt Tech podcast with Peter and Lee. Congratulations. We hope you enjoyed listening to us talking to Steve Coppard from Arum. I know we certainly did. Remember to look out for podcast number 4, which we'll be recording in the next few weeks. Our guest, we can now announce, will be Kevin Still, Director of DEMSA. He'll be talking to us about how he sees digital resources being used to help debt advisors make the most of the time they have with their clients. In the meantime, if you'd like to know a bit more about what we lovingly call Debt Tech, head over to trustfolio.co.uk on the World Wide Web.